How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to, well, we've warned you.
Hello, Jennifer. How are you on this fine day?
Well, I'm doing very well, Cam. Thank you for asking. How are you doing today?
I am doing particularly splendidly. Thank you for asking. I appreciate that.
Well, great. If everybody out there wants to know why we are so formal, it's because of the lovely review we had from Shaggy. He, which I'm assuming he is going by the pronoun he, said that white women starting a podcast with what up just solidifies my observation that two girls with too much time on their hands, might I say too much time is T-W-O.
Duly noted. Thank you, Jennifer.
Deciding to start a podcast is just not, all in capitals, a good idea. Well, thank you, Shaggy. Please move on to your misogynistic podcasts that you like to listen to.
I concur. Okay, back to us. Woo! Whatever. I'm just like, you know, white women.
Too
seriously?
Much time on my hands.
Yeah, let's say who has more time, the people making a podcast or the people that could go on and make nasty, snide little comments like that.
Whatever, let me think. Shaggy. Thanks
That's right,
for
buddy.
Your
dying love. Just kidding.
Sure. Sure.
That's not it.
Or thanks. Yeah. Whatever. Thanks for the us two nice. White women appreciate your feedback.
We do. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And you know, constructive as it is, I don't think we can get rid of our whiteness or our womanhood. I guess we could get rid of the podcast, but that's not going to happen. No. So,
actually,
bite me, Shaggy.
I would have so much time if we didn't do a podcast, but whatever.
Actually, we would have so much time just with the technical stuff. That alone would save us hours of
hours.
Time.
Hours, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. What you got for us today?
Oh, I got an old case, Jen. It's not old. Yes, I'm sorry. It is old.
Mm-hmm.
Older, but not super old.
Oh, good.
But it's
old like you.
Yes, old like me.
Which I think your birthday's this week, isn't it?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Happy birthday.
Okay. So anyway, we're going to go back in time a little bit. Not too much, but
zoo.
All right. So here we go. You ready?
And you
so today,
like
Jen.
All right, what? I'm sorry.
Another white woman just interrupting me.
I'm sorry.
With your, what is it? Needless interruptions or what was that?
Rude. I don't know. It was rude and belligerent. And, honey,
something.
You have no idea.
Yeah, this is us at our best. Let's be honest.
Exactly.
All right,
I am
here we
on
go,
my
Jen.
Best behavior when I'm on the podcast, believe
That's
me.
That's what I said. Really.
And you know what? Are. Every time we get a bad review like Shaggy, I always think, I wonder if it's somebody that I fought with on the internet because...
See, that is funny that you say that because uh-huh. That's the exact same thing I thought. Because I was like...
Of me fighting with somebody?
No, oh. Just like somebody that we upset or something, right? Because we don't start every podcast with what up. Uh-huh. I mean, sometimes we do. But like if we've already recorded a couple podcasts, you and I have already been talking for 3 hours. So
right.
There's not a whole lot to say other than, hey, what's up? And you act like it's all new again because it's going to go in another week. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it doesn't. You ready to go?
Yep,
ready to talk about non-political stuff? Non-murder, what we do best.
Yeah, murder.
So today, Jen, mm-hmm. We are going to Kew Gardens in Queens, New York, the Kew Gardens area in Queens, New York, where we are about to meet a beautiful woman by the name of Alice Crimmins. Now, 26-year-old Alice is not like most of the women of that time period, as she is about to be, you ready,
mm-hmm.
a divorcee
Ooh.
With two kids.
Scandal.
Really? Mm-hmm. I mean, really. 26 years old, and she's gorgeous, but we'll get to that in a minute. So Alice has two children, 4-year-old Alice Marie, who goes by the name Missy, and 5-year-old Eddie. Now, Alice, she dresses very well. She's got a lot of style. She's very vivacious. Let's just say that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So then ladies wanted to be friends with her. Men wanted to marry her, right? She's the envy of almost everyone. That was until something happened that summer day, and now no one would ever want to trade places with Alice. Now, Alice Crimmins was married at a young age, as, you know, most of the women and lots of the guys were back at this time period. It's 1965, by the way. Eddie worked as an airline mechanic at the time, and that's her husband. And he worked long hours, and these hours were made even longer because he would frequently stop by the bars and taverns on the way home, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Alice is sitting at home with her two little babies. So Alice is starting to get restless, and, you know, she's thinking she really wants more for herself. And so she goes and gets herself a job as a cocktail waitress. At her job, Alice was not afraid to flaunt what her mama gave her, if you know what I'm saying,
yep.
By wearing tiny little outfits in the hopes of hopefully getting better tips and, well, you know, what else comes with that? And that's some gentleman eyes, okay? Some guys checking her out, if you mm-hmm. will, okay? With the job came a few suitors, and Eddie was the jealous type at this time, okay? Now, they are going through a divorce, but of course, that does not stop Eddie from being jealous. Eddie really loved Alice, and he wanted to stay married. However, Alice, she was ready for a new adventure. She was kind of done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He had a good job. He worked long hours, but he also went out with his friends and partied. So he kind of had the best of both worlds, right?
Right.
Where she's stuck at home taking care of the kids. And she finally got a little independence, got out, got a cocktail job, and, you know, was like making friends and meeting people and things like that. So that didn't go over so well with Eddie. Alice's friends would say later on that they were actually kind of scared for Alice and that Eddie was very possessive over her. So much so that he spied on her. Now, when I say he spied on her, and this is just creepy, creepy. Mind you, it's 1965, so the technology had to be pretty terrible, I'm guessing. But he hid a microphone in her bedroom so that he could hear her when she was, how shall we say, entertaining guests, entertaining her fellows.
Oh, that's really gross.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just a little bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings us up to the date, in which became a terrible day for Alice and everybody else. It was July 14th, 1965, when Alice went into the bedroom to wake up Missy and Eddie for the day, only to see they were not in their messy, unmade beds. Instead, the window was wide open as the shears were blowing in the wind. Panicked, she calls her soon-to-be ex, Eddie, and, you know, immediately she's like, he did it. He mm-hmm. did something with the kids. So she calls him up and she's screaming at him, what did you do with the kids? Well, panic soon turns to fear as he claims he has no idea what she's talking about. He hasn't been over there all night. He has no clue what she's talking about. Alice hangs up the phone and she continues to call out the children's names, looking for them in their small apartment, thinking maybe they got up, they're playing hide and seek. You know how kids that they're mm-hmm. little and they're snickering and they think it's funny. Well, she can't find them. So she calls police and the police send two officers over.
That's not my worst nightmare. It really is. I know most parents are.
I know. Mike, when he was a little boy, went and was like hiding and he went into a closet and he fell asleep and they couldn't find him for like 2 hours and they called the police because he fell asleep. Figures, right?
That's par.
Yeah. Thank you. Now, at first, the police officers believe that this is, you know, just relax, Alice. It's okay. This is just typical kids. They probably, you know, wanted to go outside and play and just didn't tell you or anything like that. So, you know, they're trying to calm her down, thinking that with all the commotion in the neighborhood that little Missy and Eddie would show up. Well, hours kind of tick away, and with no sign of Missy or Eddie, they decide to send two detectives over. So Detective George Martin was the older officer, and he was actually getting ready to retire, while his partner was a young whippersnapper mm-hmm. named Detective Jerry Peering. Now, he was just starting out his career. He had just made detective. So he was, you know, he was a little hungry. Little kind of a go-getter, whereas Detective Martin was more like you know, I'm just ready to be done. And that's important only because of their behavior and how this all unfolds. Now, it's important here that I contrast the personas of Alice alongside Detective Peering. Now, Peering was devoutly Catholic. He was a married man and father of six. And he was immediately put off by Alice. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Alice was dressed very nicely when the officers arrived. And by nice, I mean she had tight pedal pusher white pants on, white high heels, and a lot of makeup.
So now, he thought she was classless,
yes.
Trash.
Yes. Yes. A little bit, you know, loose, if you will.
Right.
Or
slutty.
You know, hussy.
Slag. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So he wasn't going to give her the time of day.
So, and he's, yeah, just wait. It gets worse. Now, she had all her hair and makeup done. Okay. Now, it's important to know she had a face full of makeup, and he would make comments about that later on. But what they didn't know, that Alice had suffered from severe acne as a kid, and she mm-hmm. was always self-conscious, and she wore a lot of makeup to try to, you know, hide yeah. her scarring and her scars. But that didn't matter. Now, her red hair, she had bright red hair, God love her, was teased up to heaven. And, well, let's just say Detective Peering made some assumptions about Alice from the moment he met her. In fact, when the two detectives arrived to the apartment, and this just burns me, Peering apparently said to his partner, "You interview the guy," meaning Eddie, "and I'll take the bitch."
Oh, lovely.
Sadly, Detective Peering did not follow protocol at the time, so he did not take any notes, nor did he take any photos, which is really shocking.
They're kids. I mean, who cares what the parents are? Their kids are missing.
1965, right?
I
think that they're thinking, okay, well, we'll get to that in a minute. So it's starting to become clear something was not right. The children's bedroom window was open, and nearby was the screen. The screen had been taken out, and it was placed on the ground, kind of leaning up against the building. So it wasn't slashed. It wasn't cut. It was removed nicely, right? Underneath the window is an old baby stroller with a box in it, and it's kind of positioned underneath the window, which would allow somebody to crawl up into the window and then also crawl back out, right? So the box was in the baby stroller to give it more height for it to be stepped on to get out or in. So at this point, Detective Peering begins the questioning of Alice. She's up first. Now, Alice tells the detective that she took the kids to the park the day before, and they played and had a picnic. They left the park around 4:30 that afternoon, and on the way home, Alice stopped by the store and got some food for dinner, which was veal and a soda pop, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they went home, and she made dinner as the kids played.
It's fancy.
Right? So the kids were fed the veal that night. Now, this is important because it comes up later. Alice said that after dinner, they all decided to go for a little drive, kind of calm the kids down a mm-hmm. little bit. And then they came back home and she got the kids ready for bed. Alice put them to bed, she says, between 8:30 and 9 o'clock. And then she went to bed. Sounds like me, Alice. She said at about midnight, Eddie needed to go use the restroom. So she got up and took him and then tucked him back in bed. So at that time, both the kids were in there. Sadly, this would be the last time that she would see her children.
Mm-hmm.
The beds looked like they had been slept in, like that they were. There wasn't anything out of place. There wasn't, you know, blood or looked like a fight or a struggle or anything like that. Now, as she's talking to the detectives, and Eddie's with the other detective, officers soon arrive and they spread out in the neighborhood, you know, casing the area looking for the kids, but also to try to see if anybody in the area has seen anything. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, officers, at this point, they're sure they're going to find the kids. They're figuring that the kids just kind of ran off and played, lost track of time, or perhaps they ran off and now they know they're going to be in trouble. But, you know, kids then at that point, they didn't, this is such a sad commentary, but they didn't go missing quite like they do today, right?
Right.
They were pretty sure that they were going to find the kids. Also, the detective would later mention that Alice had not yet cried during all this time he was talking to her about the kids missing. And to him, that set off some alarms in his head. And I know that everybody handles stress and pressure differently. So who's to say? I think I would be a mess just because, but you never know, right?
Right.
Who's to say? At this point, I do need to mention that she didn't have a boyfriend. She had two boyfriends.
Okay.
It's important.
She was seeing two men.
She was seeing two men at the same time. which is fine. But again, in 1965, that just goes to, you know, tarnish her reputation in the eyes of others. So as the officers are taking a look around the apartment, they want to know, why is there a lock on the children's bedroom door? And the lock is on the outside of the door. So Alex explained that one night, Eddie, this sounds a little familiar, crawled out of bed and he went into the kitchen and he raided the food. Like, he just tore through it, ate everything. And so in an effort to get him to quit doing that, she put a lock on the door, thereby locking them inside the room, right?
Yeah.
Well, of course, the detective is rolling his eyes, and that's just not doing any favors
on her
in
case.
His eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So next up is Eddie. Now, Detective Martin is the one that's going to interview Eddie. I mean, question Eddie. Eddie tells the detective that he had spent that day playing golf, and then he went out for food for dinner, and then he picked up a few drinks, and he simply went back home. He gave the detective a list of people who could confirm his story that were with him during the day, and then as well as at dinner and drinks. Everyone that knew Eddie and Alice knew they were in the midst of a divorce, and well, with kids involved, it's never easy, as we know. Alice had asked Eddie to move out about a year earlier, and even though Eddie did it, he was far from happy about it, especially being a strict Catholic. Eddie may have moved out, but he didn't move on. He would randomly show up at places he knew Alice would be, whether it be the grocery store or at a party of a mutual friend. Now, unlike Eddie, Alice was enjoying her new single life, and well, lots of people could tell, or she would tell. You know, the 60s were all about trying new things, right? Mm-hmm. Like drugs, female sexuality, sexual revolution, whatever you want to call it. Alice was loving it. And she'd often tell her friends about her wild escapades. Now, equal rights were also making an appearance, and women were living their best lives at this point. So to put it bluntly, Jen, Alice was enjoying sex, and enjoying sex often, and not just with one man.
How dare she?
Right? My God.
How dare she?
So the police, they're starting to kind of put some things together, and they start wondering, much like you just said, that maybe this is a little bit, Alice or Eddie did this in order to gain some leverage in the divorce, custody of the kids, or whatever, right? They're wondering if this is a prank, a ploy, whatever you want to say. As detectives are working the scene, a call comes in to the police on the scene, the detectives outside, and the detectives inside, rather. The detectives rush at Alice, which I think is just weird. Alice is placed into a police car without being told where they're going, but it soon would become clear. Alice is escorted through a bunch of overgrown weeds to a vacant lot where the tiny little body of 4-year-old Missy was found.
They made her look at the kids where they were placed?
But they didn't even tell her where she was going.
No
right?
way. They blindsided her?
Yeah, kind of. Oh, and I was just thinking, if that, I just don't. But I think that they think now that she had something to do with it. So maybe they just wanted to get her raw reaction, right? But still, you can't
still,
do that.
Still, that is...
An autopsy would reveal that Missy was asphyxiated and had died sometime between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. Now, Alice, it was said, did not break down and cry at the sight of her young baby daughter dead. But she did finally break down and cry, Jen. As the police cruiser pulled back up in front of her apartment where flashbulbs were popping off, by this time the news had caught wind of this, right? They had drug her, and maybe it's shock, you know, and that she didn't cry till she saw them, and maybe that made it real, or perhaps it was an ulterior motive. I don't know. This was the first time officers would remark that they had seen Alice cry, and it just happened to be in front of a waiting crowd of news photographers.
That's horrible.
4 days later, 5-year-old Eddie's body was located right near Van Wyck Expressway. His body was wrapped up in a blanket, but it was too badly decomposed to determine the cause of death. This is summer in New York, so I'm sure it's a little warm. Police go to question Eddie once again, and this time, his story is not quite the same as it was earlier. Instead of going to bed after a day of golf, he told police that he did go home after dinner and drinks, but then he got into his car and he drove over to Alice's house and he spied on her. He was watching her through the window. So if you think about that, that means Eddie was there that night. He was there right outside of the apartment that night. Now, Eddie admits that sometimes he would, in fact, break into Alice's place just to be there and listen, often when she was entertaining men. He would break in and listen to them have sex. Do you believe that?
That's disgusting. That's
sick. Weird, right? His story was not the only one that was a change in Jen. Alice tells officers that she went to a nearby convenience store gas station that night at about 9 p.m. Now, the gas station attendant refuted that and said it was actually more like 5:30. Now, that's a huge time difference. 9 o'clock, 5:30. We're not talking like 10 minutes, right?
Right.
And another little thing that isn't adding up is that Alice said that she fed the kids dinner, which was veal. Remember that she had purchased at the store on the way home from the park before getting them ready and putting them to bed. The medical examiner did find some food inside little Missy's stomach, but it was not veal. It was noodles and veggies, kind of like mac and cheese. There was no veal. There was no meat. So Jen, my Sherlock Holmesing, tells me somebody's not telling all the whole truth. You know what I'm saying?
Or they were fed after they were taken.
Totally. Totally.
That's what it sounds like to me.
So investigators go to Alice and Eddie, and they ask them to take a lie detector test. And they both consent. Eddie takes it and passes. Good for Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Alice goes in and she does take the exam. And, you know, she does fine for a little bit. She's doing fine. She's answering the questions. She's remaining calm. However, Alice rips off the sensors and ends up storming out of the room. The reason she did this is because she later told officers she could hear officers laughing from behind the two-way glass, and she was aggravated. They were giggling and laughing, and she could hear them. Now, I think I speak for most of us moms. You do whatever you need to do to find your babies, right? And now it's the murdered babies. You want the killer. But I think the stress, I totally could see myself doing that. Like, you're laughing? This isn't funny. This isn't a joke. And, you know, she knew that detective did not like her. So that was not helping things either, right? She wasn't getting the attention that she should have, I think.
Well, no, they didn't take it seriously.
Yeah. See, I take that back. She was getting attention, but not the right kind. But the case, the kids, the abduction and murder was not getting the attention it needed. And that was the whole problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, I also think people mourn in different ways. And I just said that earlier. And those ways look different to everyone. You know,
mm-hmm.
I, unlike Alice, I don't think I'd be partying it up in bars as if nothing occurred. And that is just what Alice did. And well, you can pretty much guess this made her no friends and made her look just a smidge guilty to those around her. So she did. She kind of just kept going on with her life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which you need to do, probably not 5 days later. You don't need to be getting drunk in bars. I'm just saying, right? And everybody is different. I don't know, right? But this all takes us back to, let's just say this kind of reminds us of a famous case out of Florida. You know, pretty young mom, kid kind of gets in the way, and well, mom fixes that, right? And mm-hmm. mom is free and living her life right now, but whatever.
Unreal.
Alice is not giving up anything, including her lifestyle at this point. Police need her to talk, and she isn't giving it up to them. And so they start figuring out ways that maybe they can get her to talk. So they kind of zoom in on her two boyfriends, all right? So Tony Grace was a man that was twice as old as Alice. So why? What's the appeal there, right? Here she's 26, gorgeous, right? And he's in his 50s. He's a portly little fella, twice her age. Let's see, what could it be? Oh, that's right. He made a lot of money as a Long Island contractor, and he actually had some connections in, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The mafia, the mob.
Oh.
Yeah. Tony liked the finer things in life, and that included women, right? So that evening that the children went missing, Alice told police that she had called Tony to see what he was doing and if he wanted to come over and visit. Wink, wink. Tony told her he couldn't, and he actually told police that when she called, he didn't think much of it. She wasn't upset. I mean, he just couldn't do it. He couldn't get away. He was busy, you know, doing what 50-year-old contractors in the mob do, I guess.
Cocaine. No, too early for cocaine.
I was going to say it's 1965.
Yeah.
That's when that reefer was that weed.
It
was bad.
That was so
that
bad.
Marijuana, the dope. Dope. There we go. Alice's other male friend was a guy by the name of Joe Roresh. Now, Joe is closer in age to Alice, and, well, he doesn't make near the amount of money as Tony did. He was a home contractor, too, but he also happened to have a wife and kids. Okay, so he was cheating on his little missus. Now, the night that Alice's children went missing, Joe was living it up, not at home, but in a bar with a few pretty ladies. So he's not a nice guy either. So
he was whoring around like Alice was.
Sure was. So it doesn't take officers too long to figure out which one of these guys they think that they could get to break and work for them, right? So Tony, the mob-connected, big-time contractor with lots of money, or Joe, the cheating husband. Ding, 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 ding. Joe it is, right?
Yep. So that's who I would pick.
So police bring in Joe to the station, and they start drilling him with questions. Joe doesn't seem to know anything about Alice or the missing kids. He claims he doesn't have anything that could help officers, right? I don't know anything, right? Mm-hmm. We all know police, right, Jen? And they're not the ones to say, okay, thanks, Joe. Thanks, buddy. You're free to go. You go ahead and go home. We'll just talk to you later. Thanks for your help. No, that is not how that's going to work. You know police, Jen. So police pull out their big gun, or in this case, it's a big secret that Joe would rather no one ever find out about, namely his wife. It seems that Joe was seeing another person at this time. And this is what we would say today is a transgender female, right?
Really, Joe?
Yes, yes. So, and you know, again, 1965, that would
put
shock
you in jail, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
terrible.
I think the laws back then were...
And he's a contractor, too. He's a construction worker.
Oh, yeah. That would ruin his career, along with the female he was seeing.
This is how I read my next sentence that I wrote. Today, that would not be such a big deal, but remember, this was 1965, and it could ruin a man like Joe who works in construction. That's what I just said, but I didn't read the next sentence.
Exactly.
So police tell Joe that in exchange for them keeping his secret from his wife and everyone else, you are going to continue to see Alice, and you are going to get her to fess up to you. Joe, of course, like he has a choice, he agrees, right? So, yeah, he's going to do this.
Yeah.
And I think he liked Alice. That's it, right? Like, he was cheating on his wife. He was seeing lots of people. So this wasn't...
He just wanted to...
Yes.
Be with people.
People.
In that way.
Not be married, right? Well, be married, but not... Yeah, you know what I'm saying. With Joe on board, the plan is launched. Police go in and they bug her entire apartment. But the strange part, Alice knew this. She knew the place was bugged. And she's a little exhibitionist, let me tell you. She enjoyed giving officers an earful. She played it up. So she would have fellas over and be extremely loud in their lovemaking, if you will. She was kind of enjoying them hearing her doing all of her daily stuff. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Alice gets out at this point and she starts to apply for a job. She's going to need a job. Now, as soon as she would get a job, she would lose it. As fast as she could get a job, Detective Perrin would find her employer and dial them up and say, hey, you know who your new employee is, right? She's the murdering mom of Queens, right?
Oh, I hope he lost his badge.
Now, that has to be illegal.
It has to be illegal.
I don't care if it's 1965 or not, whatever. So here we are, 2 years past, Jen, 2 years of police listening in to all she says and does, watching all she says and does, and they still do not have one thing to tie her to the murders of her two children. The district attorney steps up and he says, listen, enough is enough. You've been doing this for 2 years and you still have nothing. This needs to stop. Good old Detective Perrin pleaded with the DA, claiming he only needed a little bit more time, and he promised he would uncover something to tie Alice to the crimes. The DA agrees, but tells them they have to hurry up. So we see where this is going to go, you know what I'm saying? Desperate investigators decide to go back to the start of the case when they had asked for tips or information pertaining to the crime, when they had canvassed the neighborhood. Now, in a short amount of time, shockingly, they find something. It was a letter that had come into the police that stated that on the night of the murders, this person, this lady, was looking out her window and she saw something. She saw a woman who had a bundle or a large package under one arm and holding the hand of a little boy with the other. The woman and the child walk up to a car that was being driven by a man. The man grabs the package bundle and tosses it in the back, and the woman shouts at him by saying, "Don't treat her like that." Now, the only problem was this letter, it was signed anonymous. Okay.
Of course.
It'd be a little hard to find that, but okay. Well, at least with this lead, they have something, or they believe they do. So police hit the streets to try to find this anonymous person. After all, it has to be someone who would have a clear view of Alice's apartment and that area right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't take too long to find the author of the letter. It's a woman by the name of Sophie Iromirsky. Iromirsky. Mm. Hope I'm saying that right.
That's
if your
easy.
Name is Iromirsky, let me know. She admits that she did, in fact, write the letter. Officers ask her if she could see the woman clearly. Could she identify her if she saw her again or saw a picture? So Sophie says, "Yes, I can do one better. I know her name. It was Alice Crimmins."
What?
Huh? What?
What?
Huh? Yep.
The mind of a criminal can be a very dark place. But you're not scared of the dark, are you?
Are you?
Crime Con, the world's number one true crime event, is coming to London, June 2021. Get inside the mind of serial killers and psychopaths. Learn from leading criminologists. Hear from the families and survivors. Meet your favorite true crime podcasters. Immerse yourself in forensic evidence and delve deeper into unsolved crimes. Limited early bird tickets are on sale now. Visit crimecon.co.uk. CrimeCon UK, the ultimate true crime weekend. Partnered by Crime and Investigation.
So this is exactly what investigators were waiting for so long. So they rush over to arrest Alice Crimmins for the murders of her two children. Now, as you can imagine, Jen, this is going to be a huge spectacle of a trial.
Oh yeah. I'm sure they went over there with media behind them.
A beautiful red-haired vixen on trial for getting rid of her children so she could have more fun.
Mm-hmm.
Every newspaper was there, and the line was twisted around the courthouse, trying to get in and have a little sneak peek at mm-hmm. Alice. During the trial, prosecutors allege that on that July night, Alice killed little Missy and then panicked. So she called Tony, you know, Mafia Tony, who sent one of his henchmen to her apartment to help get rid of Missy and kill little Eddie. Sophie testified as to what she saw that night. The courtroom sighed in horror as Sophie said she saw Alice leave the apartment with the dead body of Missy and holding the hand of Eddie walking.
Mm-hmm. What?
But, yeah, walking, because she's testifying that she saw them. Remember, she was holding Eddie's hand.
Right.
And carrying dead.
But she didn't. She wouldn't have known if Missy was dead or not.
Of course not, Jen. We're going to get to that.
No, I'm just.
No, I know.
I hate people.
So next on the stand was boyfriend Joe, who, let me remind you, was forced to work with the police and try to get Alice to talk, but never could get her to say anything. She never did say anything that would implicate her or anybody else for that matter. He did, however, tell the jury, once they were out and about, they were on a date, Alice broke down in tears and confessed to him that she killed Missy. Alice stood up and screamed at Joe, calling him a liar and a snake.
Mm-hmm. Now, nicer also, than I would have been.
Let me be the one to point out here. Remember, they bugged everything. They bugged her house, and little Joe was working for the police.
So I'm sure he was wearing a wire.
If he was doing this, why was this not caught on?
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Here comes Dr. Milton Helpern, the chief medical examiner. He's up next. And it seems his story changed a little bit too. Now, early on, he had determined that Missy was killed somewhere between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. But on that stand that day, right there in court, right there in front of everybody, he testified that Missy had been killed around 9:30 that evening.
Hmm.
It's amazing, isn't it? 2 years later and you can do that.
I know.
That's a trick for you,
sounds
let me
like
tell you.
Got pulled out of his ass.
It is rather telling that after 2 years, the doctor changes the time of death, and the only time Alice said anything that could implicate her in the murders of her babies was the one time he was not wired up to police. Interesting. So when Alice Crimmins took the stand, and I think that's remarkable, she took the stand because she's pretty feisty, right? And, you know, you're never, they always advise you not to take the stand because it would hurt your case. Uh-huh. But she did it. Never one to back down, she answered all the questions without falter and with just a bit of horror, right? And this is a little chilling. Prosecutors asked Alice if she'd ever been swimming at her boyfriend Joe's house while his wife was out of town. Alice said, "Yes, I have been." Then when asked what she wore to go swimming, she said one time a suit and one time nothing at all.
Ooh. Ooh. Go Alice. Go
you know,
Alice.
The jury was like, oh, plus, and then all the men in there were probably like, oh,
what a slut.
Yeah.
Stay away from my man.
But it was the next answer to the question that sent chills throughout the courtroom.
Oh, and honestly, the jury was probably all male too, wasn't it?
Of course it was. Yeah. I'm positive of it.
And 65 it was. Yeah.
So it was the next question and answer that sent chills throughout the courtroom. The prosecutor asked, "Mrs. Crimmins, where were your children when you went swimming in Joe's pool when you were wearing nothing?"
Who cares?
Without missing a beat or taking a breath, Alice simply said, "They were dead."
Oh, Alice.
Not so good, Alice.
No. Wrong answer. Bad answer.
So Alice Crimmins was never presumed innocent, of course. She had been found guilty by the press and the public long before that case ever went to trial. The neighbors thought she was guilty. Everybody thought she had done it.
Do you think she said that just for shock value?
Maybe. And she was kind of like that. She was very...
Because she was kind of, at this point, she was like, F you. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's kind of how it was. I think she was so aggravated and so frustrated with all of this, it was kind of like, come at me. You know what I mean? Whatever. So I think most people would agree that she was on trial not only for her missing and murdered children, but her sexual exploits, right?
How she lived her life.
Being the brazen, beautiful woman who liked to have sex and with multiple people, right?
God forbid. Yeah.
There was never any evidence to tie her to the crimes, and no other suspect was even considered. So I said earlier, the detectives did not follow protocol. They did not take photos. They didn't follow up about the different meal in the kid's stomach. I mean, that's telling, right? Something is just not right.
And it was only after the detective was said, "Listen, you got to shit or get off the pot," did that anonymous letter show up, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that only makes me question that anonymous letter.
So on the day of the verdict, it was standing room only. And I'm talking standing room in the courthouse room, in the courthouse, on the sidewalk, and everywhere. The verdict came in, and with it, applause for it and yells against it. Alice Crimmins was found guilty of murder of her daughter, Missy, and was sentenced to 10 years. The jury was made up of 12 men, all of whom were married.
Of course.
So, Jen, obviously, this turned out to be one of the highest profile trials ever at that time. Alice Crimmins was convicted of manslaughter. Right after hearing the verdict, she, of course, fell to the ground. She ended up being hospitalized, and I think she was in there for a little bit over 2 weeks. She then went and spent 24 days in jail. However, her lawyers were able to get her conviction overturned. It would be 6 years after the death of her two babies that she would end up taking the stand again in March of 1971. This time, she ended up being convicted of first-degree murder for her son and manslaughter for her daughter. In 1973, her convictions were overturned due to tainted statements by the prosecutor.
Huh.
So while she was in jail, she actually got married to Anthony Grace. He was a man that kind of came into the picture at one time and thought maybe he had helped her out, but that was never proven. And in 1977, she was paroled. She moved to Florida with Anthony, and they lived there till Anthony died. They lived a pretty good life in Florida there.
Did they have any children? Do you know?
I don't think they did.
By the time she would get out of prison and...
Yeah, yeah.
They probably were too old to have kids. Wow. So what do you think? Do you think she did it?
I just don't know. I think if there's a lot more to this and there's a lot more out there if people want to go check it out. And I'll put a bunch of links on here. It's just... I think it's telling about how different the media... I mean, today, this... Well, like I said earlier, this is very similar to Casey Anthony and, you know, anybody that's cute and young. And, you know, this... I kind of tend to believe that... I don't know. Eddie just strikes me as something's just a little off with Eddie. Like, listening to him, listening to her, sneaking over, watching through the windows. I don't know. I almost tend to believe he would be have something more to do with it than her. You know?
Right. Well, I think it's more common, especially we know that women would mostly poison their kids. But, and remember the case we did with Peggy Reber, the police didn't do much because of her mother. Her mother was considered a sex worker and slept around. So they tried to make her look bad more than they tried to find the real killer of Peggy.
Right.
So this has a lot of the same. You know,
I don't know. And the sad part is we'll really never know because it's...
No, they screwed it up so badly that they only went to, they honed in on Alice and they didn't even check to see if there could have been any other
they zoomed in on
suspect. And you know, it really makes me wonder about that anonymous note if the police maybe had the woman write a note. If that was all a setup and maybe, I don't know.
I can't find it here because I wrote this a while ago, but I do believe that they figured out who that woman was on the street and it was not Alice at all. Like they found the person, but that never really, they didn't focus on that because that didn't meet their agenda. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was, I want to say it was like a rolled up carpet if I remember that correctly, but.
Well, and the fact that they used tainted statements and it doesn't sound like they had any hard evidence against her. It was all purely circumstantial.
Oh, totally.
Which I know circumstantial evidence is evidence, but I don't know.
So anyway, that's it. But yeah. Check
those poor babes.
So I don't know, Jen. I don't know. And I started researching this other case because we were trying to find out something to do on Halloween. And I started writing it and getting the research together and stuff, but then I got sidetracked. But basically, very similar to this. It's kind of like, did the mom do it? Did the mom not do it?
Yeah.
So
interesting. Interesting. You watching anything good?
The Haunting of Bly Manor. I just started that yesterday. That's pretty good.
Yep. I've got one or two more episodes. Now, have you read any? I was looking up a little
James.
Bit about.
Yeah.
Henry James, like almost every episode is a Henry James short story. Did you know that?
No, I knew it was based on that.
Turn of the Screw, right.
Yeah.
But like every episode is like another Henry James, like the story devolves about another Henry James short story or novella, which I've only read Turn of the Screw.
I had to read it
I haven't
in college.
Read.
The first time I went through college.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In one of my literature classes.
It works.
Yeah.
It's a good story. It's just
it's
dated.
Yeah, it's dated. That's that one guy. I think he's got. I think I sense a little bit of a Scottish or Irish accent. Well, he's kind of cute. Call me, buddy. Call me.
Little. He's Irish. Yeah.
I know.
He's not a good guy, but yeah, that's.
I'm not that far
that
yet.
It's
well, kind of right at that part. So we'll see.
Oh.
You know what just breaks my heart when Netflix sends me an email and says, Camille. Have we got a show you'd like to see? And I get all excited and I open it and I've already seen them all.
I liked Bancroft. I watched that. That was good. A Confession was good. That was with, I want to say Morgan Freeman, but it's not Morgan Freeman. It's Martin Freeman.
I think I have seen
that. That was really good.
I think I have seen
that. I love him. I think he's adorable.
I do too.
There's those David Tennant stuff.
I know.
That
I got
like.
Lots to watch. Don't, maybe I'll do that this afternoon because, you know,
yeah,
we already did our 40-minute podcast recording that only took us 4 hours because that's us. So there's that.
If it's not computer problems, it's internet problems. The internet went down 3 times we were trying to record this, and in the history of OTCP, that has never happened.
No, never.
Like the internet has never gone down ever.
No. When I say I would not be surprised if a giant boulder fell from an airplane going overhead and came through my ceiling right now, I would not be shocked. I would be like, yep, it's because we're recording.
It's always how it works.
So anywho, we have any promos this week, Jen?
We do, actually. Thank you for reminding
That's
me.
That's what I'm here for, Jen. What
Our good friend, Mike from Brew Crime.
Mike.
And our
Mike.
Other good friend, Emma from True
Emma.
Crime,
Emma.
Which have a new podcast coming out very shortly.
They have one together?
Yes.
Isn't that amazeballs?
It is called The Trail of Destruction, and it comes out very soon. So go to Apple or wherever you get your podcast information and make sure you subscribe. It's going to be a good one.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Is Emma?
And also, while you're there, if you're listening to us and you're not like Shaggy or any of the other haters, you can go subscribe to us on iTunes or any other podcast needs and wants.
And you can give us a review, too. So, Jen, until next time, remember, lock your doors.
And please keep passing by those opened windows.
Bye. Bye and goodbye.
Love you. Also, go get a flu shot.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
All right, you want to try to do this again?
Yeah. Clap and then start.
You got the clap? Is that what you said? You got the clap?
I do, and the cream's not working.
Oh,
damn
God,
it.
That's so gross. Ew. Okay. Was the one time he was not wired up to police. Interesting. I write that. See, I write my thoughts and then I say them before I, whatever. That's why I'm a dork.
Yeah. Well,
all right, so it's
one
about
of
to
the
get
many
even
reasons.
More.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Record. Hey, Nico.
It's well,
back for the third time. Sorry.
For the third time.
I swear to God.
It's always something, Jen. It's always something. At the beginning of this, it was me. Now it's your internet. It's always something. It's always
my internet doesn't do this.
People can't make this up. I'm not kidding.
I had to totally.
This does not occur to other people.
Unplug everything and reboot everything. And it's finally coming up. I guess maybe they're working on the line or something.
Yeah, they have to be, I would think.
Pisses me off.
I'm pulling up the script because, of course, all that went down too.
Sorry,
so
Nico.
I'm gonna go find it back. It's okay. Oh, I thought you meant. Yeah, sorry, Nico.
No, I don't care about you.
I know.
So I just saw on your Facebook page while I was waiting for the internet to come back that you baked a pumpkin pie.
I know it was good. I love me some pumpkin.
And you know what? I don't think I've ever really seen a homemade pumpkin pie that did not have cracks in it. So, I think...
That they were supposed to. No?
I don't know. He said they had a few cracks and he had like this teeny tiny crack. But I never saw a home-baked pumpkin pie that didn't have a crack. So...
I got you.
I don't know. What do I know? I only watch the GBBO. I don't participate.
That's true.
Which, are you watching the new season? Meal?
No.
Great British Bake Off?
No. I knew what you were talking about, but I haven't seen it yet. Nope.
Yeah, it's so good. Cute little Peter. Oh my God, he's adorable. He's like 12, I think.
Oh.
He's so cute. And then there's Sura, who I totally love. She wears, I don't think it's a hijab. I don't know what it is, but she's absolutely, her skin's flawless.
Like
she's
mine.
Beautiful.
Just kidding.
She's the one that used that Za'atar spice that we were just talking
about.
Oh,
yeah, like, yeah.
What the hell is the Za'atar right. spice? Yeah. And then there's Lottie. Lottie's also really
Lottie, she's
funky. I like her. Those are my favorites. Those are the three I want to win.
Okay. All right. Yeah, but
I'm a hard evidence. You know I mean? Like my evidence hard. Like I like my words.
What?
I like hard words.
Okay. Just yeah, joke. Okay. Okay, that's weird. Okay.
Yeah, whatever. Your birthday's coming up.
We already talked about that.
I know, but I just like to remind you.
Your birthday's coming up. Yours, right after mine. 6 days later.
No.
6 days later, you have a birthday too.
I have an anniversary, not a birthday.
It's an anniversary of your 29th birthday.
I got you. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm so old, I have to do the 39th birthday now because 29th isn't feasible.
At this point, I'd take 49.
I know. It's going to be so cool, and I want to make sure that I have the right thing, so...
Do, 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 do,
do. It is called...
What up?
Sit around.
What up, Jen?
What up?
What up, man?
Oh, Lord, all right.
All right, that's all I got, and so we're not bitter at all. But you know what? We may be a little bit bitter, but guess what? We have a podcast, and you don't.
I will tell you that I am pretty much 100% petty. I'm not going to lie.
Petty AF. Petty. Hello.
Mm.
Whatever.
Actually, that's my middle name. Jen Petty Podcast.
That's true. Oh, good. Good times. You know, I'm sure people get annoyed by this, but sometimes it makes me laugh. I got to tell you, just because it does. But that's my kind of humor, right? To make fun to make fun of those that... make fun of us, right? Yes.
But just
totally
don't.
Fair.
Yeah.
It's the circle of life, baby. It's the podcast review circle of life.
Everyone thinks of Canada as the polite and friendly country. But what if I told you that was a lie? Canada has left a trail of destruction in its path, even before the Confederation in 1864.
In this series, we will cover the Indian residential schools that are a stain on the fabric of this country. Coming soon to a podcast player near you is Trail of Destruction, a podcast series that will dig deep into one of Canada's darkest secrets.
It is a history of stripping Indigenous culture from a people in the name of colonization.
Created by Emma of True Crime Witch Podcast and Mike from Brew Crime Podcast, we would like to make it clear that we are in no means speaking on behalf of the Indigenous communities of Canada. We simply want to use our platform and our voices to amplify the voices of Indigenous Canadians and highlight the issues that have been swept under the rug by the government and the media.